If you are an investor, or well, even if you just work inside a modern corporation, you have likely heard Jeff Bezos's famous warning to his
Right,
competitors.
the margin quote.
Exactly. He built an empire on a very specific philosophy, stating, quote, "Your margin is my opportunity."
It is a very well-known concept on Wall Street.
It is. The underlying implication there is that if you operate a highly profitable business, capitalism will eventually send someone to steal those profits. It is a compelling idea, but according to a deeply insightful article from the Averaging Up collection we are looking at today, Jeff Bezos is actually only half right.
Yes, that is the core argument of the piece.
So our mission for this deep dive is to decode what is essentially a massive blind spot on Wall Street. We are going to explore why two companies can report the exact same impressive profit margins, yet, one is positioned to conquer the world while the other is quietly marching toward bankruptcy.
Right, and understanding that requires a complete, well, a fundamental shift in how you evaluate a business. You have to look past the financial output. I mean, the numbers printed on the income statement. You have to examine the structural input.
Which is not how things are typically done.
Not at all. The institutional world tends to look at high margins as either a target on a company's back, an invitation for disruption, or conversely, as definitive proof of a company's invincibility. And both of those assumptions can be fatal to your portfolio.
So to understand why that is, we need to establish a foundational framework for you, the listener, before we go any
That
further.
is crucial, yes.
Right. Before you can analyze whether a company's profit margin is sustainable, you have to look at the two underlying engines that operate within every single business. The article defines these internal forces as the A and the B.
The A and the B.
Yes, let's break those down. Think of the A as the toll. This is the cash the business collects today. It is entirely in the present tense.
So, for example, if you think about a payment network like Visa, the A is the fractional percentage they take on every single transaction processed today.
Exactly. Or for a consumer brand, it is simply the revenue generated from the physical products sold this quarter.
Right, so the A gives you a snapshot of current operations. The B, on the other hand, is the wave. This is the structural growth that arrives over time.
The future tense.
Precisely. It is the underlying, often invisible force that compounds the A into something significantly larger over a decade. So, continuing with that Visa example, the B is the global digitalization of payments.
The relentless shift away from physical cash toward electronic transactions.
Yes, exactly. So, we have the toll representing the present and the wave representing the future.
And the fundamental rule we need to establish right now for the rest of this analysis is that the quality of that B, combined with the depth of the company's protective moat, determines everything.
It dictates the entire reality of the business.
Right. Those two structural factors alone dictate whether high margins are a sign of sustainable dominance, or whether they're just a dangerous illusion.
Because the margin itself is merely a visible surface metric. It is the exhaust coming out of the engine.
I like that analogy.
The A, the B, and the moat constitute the actual machinery. They are the invisible architecture beneath the surface. If you do not understand that machinery, the exhaust tells you very little of value.
Which brings us to a rather striking comparison from the article that highlights exactly why traditional Wall Street analysis is flawed.
The spreadsheet example.
Yes, imagine you are looking at a spreadsheet comparing two different companies. First, you have a pharmaceutical company with a massive blockbuster drug, but that drug is coming off patent in, say, 18 months.
A very common scenario in that industry.
Right. And next to it, you have Visa. Both of these companies currently report 60% operating margins. Both have maintained those stellar margins for a decade, and both trade at premium valuation multiples in the public markets.
On paper, if you are looking strictly at that 60% margin, they appear to be businesses of equal quality. But their underlying architectures are diametrically opposed.
Entirely different.
Yes, Visa is positioned to compound its margins for decades. Their toll is infrastructural, and their wave is a secular trend toward digital commerce. They are woven into the very fabric of the global economy.
While the pharmaceutical company is walking toward an impending cliff, I mean, the moment generic competitors flood the market, their margins will collapse in a single quarter.
Because their moat was a patent. And patents are temporary by definition. They expire.
Right.
The number on the financial statement is identical for both companies, but the futures those numbers describe could not be more divergent.
And this exposes a massive institutional blind spot. Organizations like Morningstar or, you know, sell-side analysts at major investment banks, they often worship at the altar of margins.
They do. They use them as the primary and sometimes the solitary signal of business quality.
They build complex valuation models around them and assign enduring moat ratings based almost entirely on historical margin stability.
It is because the entire language of institutional investing treats margin stability and expansion as definitive proof of operational excellence and durability.
They see the symptom.
Yes. Analysts see the margin and immediately infer the quality of the business without ever pausing to ask what specific structural mechanics actually produce that margin. They work backward from the symptom rather than forward from the architecture.
Which actually brings up a fascinating paradox from the Averaging Up article. Chuck Acker is a legendary investor who built a phenomenal track record, and he did it partly by seeking out businesses with exceptionally high consistent margins.
Yes, he is famous for that approach.
He looked at a company like MasterCard, which maintained margins above 55% for over a decade while compounding at 20%, and he saw the signature of an exceptional business.
Right.
So my question is, if the institutional lens of focusing on margins is a trap, why did it work so perfectly for Acker?
That is a critical distinction to make. Acker succeeded because he understood the difference between the symptom and the disease, or, more accurately, the symptom and the cure.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
He was right about MasterCard, not simply because the margins were high, but because MasterCard possesses a flawless architecture. It is what the author of the piece categorizes as a free surfer.
A free surfer?
Yes. In a free surfer business, the toll and the wave are perfectly aligned, and critically, the growth cost the company almost nothing.
So he used the margin as confirmation of the architecture he had already analyzed, rather than the starting point of his analysis.
Exactly. Institutions often mistake the margin for the cause of a company's strength. Acker saw that MasterCard's margins were the visible trace of an infrastructural moat, combined with a natural B that required zero capital expenditure to maintain.
He was not fooled by the metric itself.
No, he used the metric to verify the structure.
And because institutions frequently confuse that symptom with the cause, they inevitably fall into predictable and, frankly, often disastrous analytical traps.
The four margin traps.
Yes, the article systematically unpacks four specific traps where high margins actively mislead investors. Let's use a mental model here to help you, the listener, visualize this.
A very helpful way to frame it.
Think of a profit margin as the street view of a commercial building. From the sidewalk, the architecture looks magnificent. But to understand its true value, we have to inspect the foundation. The first trap the framework identifies is the toll without a wave.
And a prime example here is See's Candies. Warren Buffett has frequently called it his favorite small business.
It is legendary in value investing circles.
It boasts extraordinary margins, a beloved brand, and a toll that collects cash reliably year after year. The building looks pristine from the street.
But the building is situated in a completely landlocked neighborhood. It lacks a structural B.
Exactly. The addressable market for boxed chocolates does not expand structurally. People are not going to exponentially increase their consumption of See's Candies year over year.
Right.
The profits they generate are very real, but they cannot be reinvested back into the business at high rates of return because there is no wave to compound into. The company is essentially capped by its geography and its product category.
So it is a magnificent A with no B. It functions beautifully as a dividend machine, generating excess cash that Buffett can extract and deploy into other businesses, but See's itself is not a true compounder.
The margins signal high quality, but the growth is entirely plateaued.
Which brings us to the second trap, the rented moat.
The Coca-Cola example.
Yes. Coca-Cola reports operating margins consistently above 30%. The brand recognition is unparalleled on a global scale. Again, a very impressive building.
Yeah. But this building requires a massive continuous maintenance budget just to keep the walls from crumbling.
Right. That moat is rented, not owned.
Coca-Cola must spend roughly $4 billion annually on advertising and marketing. And they are not spending that capital to achieve rapid new growth. They are spending it merely to maintain their existing shelf space and mind share in the consumer's brain.
Just to stand still.
Exactly. If they stop spending that $4 billion, the brand equity immediately begins to erode. Furthermore, the wave they are riding is actually in structural decline.
Because of health trends?
Health-conscious consumers are actively shrinking the global addressable market for sugared beverages. So you have a scenario where the margins appear high, but the underlying cost of defending those margins is astronomical.
The B is mechanical, it is highly expensive, and it is flowing directly against the current of broader consumer behavior.
Precisely. Now, the third trap is named after the late Harvard academic Clayton Christensen, focusing on his theory of disruptive innovation.
The Christensen trap. This one illustrates a scenario where a building looks flawless, but it is situated directly on an active fault line.
Incumbents optimize their existing franchises and report excellent margins right up until the exact moment a new wave destroys them.
We saw this vividly with Kodak, right? They reported incredibly strong margins on their film business while early digital photography was emerging.
We also saw it with Nokia reporting robust margins on their traditional mobile phones, while the smartphone ecosystem was being built in the background.
And the institutional narrative celebrates that margin stability as definitive proof of durability.
But Christensen demonstrated that those high margins are often proof of terminal complacency. We have to look at the mechanics of why this happens.
How the margin creates the blindness.
Yes. The management team at a company like Kodak looks at their legacy film business generating 60% margins. Then they look at early digital cameras, which might generate, say, 5 or 10% margins.
So rationally, they refuse to cannibalize their highly profitable core business to pursue a low-margin alternative.
Exactly. They optimize the current quarter's margin, actively ignoring that a disruptive wave is building just outside their moat. Their financials look flawless right up until the day they file for bankruptcy.
And finally, we arrive at the fourth trap, the financial engineer.
This is perhaps the most deceptive building of all.
It looks structurally sound from the outside because management is quietly ripping out the internal copper wiring and selling it to pay for a fresh coat of paint.
A very apt metaphor.
This trap occurs when a business with shrinking revenue camouflages its decline through aggressive share buybacks, drastic cost cutting, and restructuring.
The mechanics here are crucial to understand. The operating margins might look perfectly stable, and the earnings per share might even appear to be compounding steadily.
But that growth is entirely illusory.
It is contraction dressed up as expansion. They are laying off staff, slashing research and development, and using any available cash to buy back stock, which artificially inflates the earnings per share metric.
So there is no B whatsoever, and the core A, the actual revenue, is shrinking.
The business is essentially consuming its own organs to maintain the outward appearance of health.
If you run a traditional quality screen on Wall Street that sorts for high margins and filters for consistency, every single one of those companies, See's, Coca-Cola, Kodak, and the financial engineer, would rank highly.
They would all pass the screen.
And in every single case, relying on that screen would lead you straight into a trap. So if those examples demonstrate deep structural flaws, we need to define what an impenetrable architecture actually looks like. What is the profile of a business where the margins tell the absolute truth?
This brings us back to the concept of the free surfers. Visa and MasterCard are the ultimate archetypes here.
Right.
They operate with margins hovering around 67%. Their A efficiently collects a fractional toll on virtually every electronic transaction that occurs globally.
And their B, the digitalization of payments, is entirely free. It arrives year after year without any required capital expenditure on their part.
Furthermore, their moat is truly infrastructural. No government or corporation is going to successfully decree the creation of a second parallel global payment rail from scratch. The network effects are simply too entrenched.
Another compelling example the article provides is the major ratings agencies, specifically S&P Global and Moody's.
Yes, they operate with robust margins well above 40%. Their B is natural, driven by the continuous, inevitable expansion of global debt issuance.
And their moat is a deeply entrenched regulatory and cooperative duopoly. I mean, every time a corporation or municipality issues a bond, they are essentially required by the architecture of the financial system to pay for a rating.
The system reinforces itself with every transaction.
I want to push back slightly here, or rather ask a clarifying question about the fundamental nature of a free surfer.
Certainly.
Is the defining characteristic here simply that volume grows on a fixed cost base? Are we saying that the digitalization of payments or the issuance of global debt happens regardless of whether Visa or S&P spend a single dollar to promote it?
That is exactly the crucial distinction. The defining characteristic is that the marginal cost of the B is effectively zero.
Zero marginal cost.
Yes. Visa does not have to build expensive new manufacturing plants or launch multi-billion dollar advertising campaigns to convince consumers to shop online rather than using physical cash.
The broader secular wave of e-commerce does all the heavy lifting for them.
Precisely. Because their underlying cost base is largely fixed, every new transaction processed on their network drops straight to the bottom line, naturally expanding the margin over time.
The article details three converging signals that confirm this type of true, enduring durability.
To trust the margin, you need to see a deep moat, a natural or high-quality B, and high margins occurring simultaneously.
Because any one of these factors in isolation can severely mislead you.
Absolutely. A deep moat without a wave gives you C's candies, highly profitable margins that simply do not grow. A natural B without a moat results in rapid growth that quickly gets competed away by rivals entering the space.
But when all three align, the signal is authentic.
Yes.
So to avoid the four traps we discussed and successfully identify these free surfers, you must learn to process financial information differently. The author provides a specific framework for this, which requires fundamentally inverting the traditional institutional order of analysis.
The institutional approach starts with margins and infers quality. The inverted framework demands that you evaluate the structural components first, before you even look at the income statement.
Step one.
Step one is to evaluate the moat. You have to determine if the business's defense is infrastructural and highly durable, or if it is rented and temporary, requiring constant capital to maintain.
Then step two is to evaluate the B. You must ask if the structural growth is natural and inevitable, driven by a broad secular trend, or if it is mechanical and expensive, requiring constant forceful pushing by management.
And step three, only after completing a rigorous analysis of the first two steps, is to look at the margins. Use the margins last, relying on them solely as confirmation of your structural analysis.
You do not use them as a tool for initial discovery.
Never.
And if you track these margins over a 10-year period using this framework, a highly specific trajectory emerges based on the underlying architecture of the business. The article refers to this trajectory as the margin gradient.
The gradient behaves predictably based on the structure. For a true free surfer, margins will systematically expand over a decade because expanding volume is continuously growing on that fixed cost base.
Right. And if a company has a mechanical B but operates inside a strong moat, their margins will generally remain stable.
Because the moat protects their pricing power, allowing them to absorb the expensive cost of growth.
But if a company has a mechanical B operating outside of a protective moat, their margins will inevitably compress towards zero.
That is the gravitational constant of capitalism actively at work. Without a moat, new entrants will continuously replicate the offering, underprice the incumbent to gain market share, and steadily erode the margins until the economic profit disappears.
Which brings our entire discussion full circle to the opening hook. Jeff Bezos warned, "Your margin is my opportunity."
He did.
But based on the physics of this margin gradient, Bezos is actually only correct about businesses operating at the very bottom of the gradient, those with a mechanical B and no structural moat.
The gravitational pull of capitalism absolutely applies to them.
And Amazon has built its retail empire by exploiting that exact vulnerability. But Bezos cannot simply decide to steal Visa's margin or S&P Global's margin.
Because a deep infrastructural moat overrides the gravitational constant of capitalism. On a level playing field, Bezos's maxim holds true. High margins naturally invite fierce competition.
But a free surfer does not operate on a level playing field.
They operate from an entrenched fortress. Bezos can ruthlessly optimize his own supply chain, drive down costs, and undercut his retail competitors. But at the end of the day, when a customer clicks purchase on Amazon, he still has to pay the toll to the global payment rails.
Synthesizing everything we have unpacked today, the core thesis you need to walk away with is this. Margins are not a destination, they are a confirmation.
A very succinct way to put it.
Starting your analysis with margins leads you straight into the Christensen trap, where you find yourself celebrating Kodak's last good quarter right before the collapse.
Right.
Starting your analysis with the structural moat and the secular wave leads you to Visa.
It forces you to look at the fundamental physics of the business, rather than just the superficial accounting. And I would challenge you, the listener, to apply this inverted framework to your own professional life.
Examine the profit margins of the company you currently work for, or look closely at the businesses sitting in your retirement portfolio.
Ask yourself the difficult question. Are those high margins the light shining through an indestructible architecture, or are they merely a temporary symptom masking a structural, irreversible decline?
That is the crucial question to ask before you trust the numbers printed on page. If you want to explore more sophisticated mental models and structural frameworks like this one, you can find further analysis from the Averaging Up collection by visiting averagingup.com. Keep digging into the architecture beneath the surface, and we will see you on the next deep dive.